This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
So here we are on the final day on August the 7th in sunny colon. I say sunny because yesterday evening we had a heck of a thunderstorm blew through. I understand we had 2 inches of rain. And there have been some down tree limbs, and I was just talking with Louis Fox. His tent apparently got smashed into by a trash can lid, but kind of crushed it. But anyhow, he's got a story to tell for his first Abbots. And I'm here then, speaking of Abbots, with someone who started kind of his career, I guess, with Abbots working there, Mr. Tim Wright. Skildini. Hey there, Tim.
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Fine. You're yawning like, oh, you just woke up.
No, I haven't gone to bed yet.
Oh, you were up at the Legion. What time did they close the Legion?
No, I don't go to the Legion. I was at Greg's father's house performing, doing shows up until 3 in the morning.
Oh, my.
Yeah, we had fun.
You had a lot of audience there watching?
Well, it turned out there was quite a crowd, yes. We had a lot of fun.
So tell me, again, you were how old whenever you were working at Abbott's, and how did you get started there?
Well, I had a keen interest in magic from... I'm not sure what age. I came up in a boat, parked it with a friend that had a place on the lake, his mom and dad, and we walked in, and there was Duke Stern and this and that, and I don't remember exactly how old I was then, but I was the bug bit, and the spot never quit itching, and at my senior year in high school, I said, can I go down to Colon and work at Abbott's, and my parents were flabbergasted, and they let me do it, and Riesel put me in the wood shop. So I was 17. I turned 18 in September, so I was 17 when I went to work at Abbott's.
And did you know anything about woodworking, or was that one of your wood shop that you took in school? Or?
Yeah, that I kind of passed a test with Arturo, and I used to go to his garage and watch him build Imperial ensembles and Oriental fantasies, and, of course, beautiful. What's the trick with the up and down load chamber called? The Far East silk cabinet and the church silk cabinet. So I was fortunate to hang around with him in his wood shop and watch how he used birch plywood and lacquer and so on. So I had a little head start, and I did have some training, vo-ed training in woodworking in high school.
Do you continue with that today? I mean, do you still like to play around with wood?
Well, yeah, I just finished up over this past winter, a dozen Abbott dye boxes, and I just gave Greg 2 of them, and so that
you
was
put your name on them like Arturo did?
No, I don't have the stamp, and they're unsigned, and they're Abbott products.
Yeah,
yeah.
Now, also, I know Tom Mullica had worked at Abbott's. Were you there during that time?
Sure. Actually, I wanted the job. Riesel gave Mullica the job prior to me getting in there. He showed me the letter Tom had written to Riesel asking to come to Colon from Waupun, Wisconsin, and join the Abbott crew. And Riesel hired him, and I was disappointed. But afterward, I got involved, too, and got a job. Riesel was kind enough to hire me, too.
Wow. And so both of you worked side by side then? Or
we were
about
both
the same age?
No, Tom was older than I am,
okay.
4 or 5 years older than I am. But, yeah, he was downstairs in the wood shop in the corner, and I had a seat in the middle area. Arturo and Bud West were in the corners. And
how many people to have all together, I mean, just in the manufacturing end of the business?
Well, if you were to add it up, you'd go 2 in the office, Riesel, Neil pasting up tops. You keep track of the numbers.
Okay, it's 4.
We had Dorothy in the back doing fabric, and we had Ida May. Her daughter was in and out. She was going to school to become a policewoman, and she did tie-dye. She did zombie silks. And so you could almost make her
full-time.
Yeah, Doris. How many is that?
That's 7.
Is it 7?
Yeah.
And then you go down the stairs, and hard left is Walt Schroeder, which is the nicest guy you ever wanted to meet. He was in the print shop, and he's the guy that gave me the tagline, deceptive entertainment that is delightfully right. and I put that on my card, and I used the graphic from the Twin Die ad, and that font, which I love, I was going to pay somebody to create that font, but I never followed through on it. But then, if you wouldn't have turned left, you go straight, right on the right there is a West Jack. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. And he sat there and did plastics with a big oven and kind of sung that tune as you walked by every time. And if you keep going, on the left, there was three guys standing at a bench. And Walt, I forget, Greg knows these guys, but there was a Walt, and there was a Buff West, which was Bud West's brother. And then there was another guy doing metal work there.
Buff and Bud.
Right.
Okay.
And Jack. And Art. Well, no, Archie was a capman. Okay, so.
That's 12.
Is that 12 with three in the metal shop?
Yeah.
You walk down the ramp, and you're in the wood shop. And there was Arturo, and there was Bud West, and there was me and Mullica and Jim Capman. So if you count Mullica and I, which were not long-term employees, what's that?
About 17.
Right. And then you go up the hill, and on the left, there was a little building next to the main building there, and that was the paint shop. And Archie was in there. He was a capman, and his brother Jim worked in the wood shop. Then you had women. Kay Decker, I think it was Kay Decker, did the flowers. It was Kay. I think she was related to Dorothy back in number 12. Number 12 was the fabric department. And then you had ladies that made the hats and pants, different set of ladies. You, of course, had the Amish that made the straight jackets and all the leather straps and all that. And then you had Potawatomi Indians coming in and out with baskets. And I guess that's about it as far as participation and full-time employees. But it was near 20 people that were employed there at the shop.
What year
were
that again?
71.
Okay.
I got out of high school in December. I left halfway through my high school. So 72 happened in January. So 71, 72.
So my question also, it sounds like with all those people and with the demand for magic and the catalogs that were going out, you say printing and all this is all part of the business, were they doing like just-in-time inventory so they would have things ready, or they have a big stock of things that were popular, they'd make more of those, or they have a, what was that like?
Well, they didn't have a warehouse management system, as we know today people have. They had hunches.
Okay.
They had handwritten lists, and the orders would come in. Reese would take his little dagger and open up the orders. He'd put them in a little flat, cardboard flat box, stack them up, lay them on the counter in the shipping department. You grab a flat, you walk out in the showroom, and you go in through those metal green cabinets, and you fill it up as full as you could make it. Anything you didn't get was backordered, and you write a little slip of paper that said, to follow. In terms of inventory, Riesel kind of knew what was going on, what was selling, and each department had a list, and it was written on a piece of paper by Riesel. Metal shop, you know, we need whatever, a card sword, three of those. We need, you know, maybe coffee vases, some bird cages, wood shop, you know, we need wood products. Print shop, every month you had to do tops, and you had to go downstairs, and you had to fold every page by hand in a big folding machine. You sat there all day dabbing glycerin on your fingers. Bam, 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 bam. Every page of tops had to be folded. Then
hand folded.
Well, it was a machine. It was okay. This big rollers. And Mr. Schroeder Walt, who I loved, he was so cool. He was deaf from working in a print shop, you know, with all that constant
pre-OSHA.
Well, I don't know about that, but it was not, earplugs were not on the wall, you know. But you folded those tape pages, you put them in a wooden rack on top of, there were these big cabinets with pull-out drawers that had all of those lead slugs that you used when you did printing of business cards and what have you. So he pulled this big thing apart, two of them, and those were the pages. So you folded all the pages, and then you had to insert them in this wooden accordion-type thing, and you'd walk down, bam, 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 you turn the corner, bam, 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 and you get a cover and you put it on. So now you've got, then you got to go to the stapler. So then you go to the stapler, and you got to go there with your foot, clunk, clunk, and then you lay them, and you put 10 one way, 10 the other way. Then you got to go over to the trimmer, and the trimmer was this Mayflower-looking prehistoric thing with a big cast arm, and Greg used to do this, and that, whoever got stuck with that job, that was the hardest job in the print shop. You had to lay these things down. You had to move them in and out with a little wheel, and then you had to clamp them down, and you grab that giant arm, and you go, and then you had to turn them all and do it again and turn them all again and get all three edges. And then those Topps magazines for the month, and you had to do it all over again the next month, you know.
And how, what was their subscription or circulation back then?
I mean, like
thousands?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But there were a lot of magazines. It wasn't 50, I'll tell you. It was hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds of Topps.
And Sid Lorraine was one of the main writers back then, wasn't he?
Well, you know how that was. You used to get Topps or not?
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm.
You got John Sherwood, Lost in the Forest, which he's from Marshall, and you had George Johnstone, you had Carroll, you had, you know, all them guys were writing articles. Sid, I guess he had an article. I guess he contributed greatly to graphics at Abbott's, but I forget if he had a monthly thing. I guess he did.
Might have been later in the new Topps.
Maybe. So, yeah, there were the standard issue guys that were professionals that did articles at that point in time, yeah.
That's an amazing history about Abbott's. I think it's a little known by many of us, so thanks for sharing it. That was very, very cool. So also, you had gone from Wright to Scaldini. You were one of the performers on the show here then this year as well. And so what was that transition like?
Well, Neil was Chavez, and I wanted the course. And we had to negotiate with Marion to get the books all at once. He said that she will only send them out one a month. And so I wrote her a letter, and Neil intervened. And we got them in three installments, 17 books, instead of month by month by month. So I had a big swath to work on. And I'd go into Neil's office when he was pasting up Topps, and I'd work on my split fans, or I'd work on the balls. And I was always hamming it up. And, you know, Mullica was running around a little bit. We used to hang out together quite a bit. So there's no way I was Neil Foster. So I was always jerking around with Chavez and not doing it straight. And then many, many years later, I was laying in bed and I thought, you know, Scaldini is a name nobody's using. And I just thought, well, I'll be Scaldini. That's
the name just came to you at night when
you
were
laying
in
bed. And then I called some people. I won't name names. Oh, that's stupid. There's too many Deanies in Manny. Ah, there's too many Deanies. That's dumb.
And I hear like Jay Marshall saying that to somebody, you know.
Well, it was a guy that was as big as Jay, okay. But he's today here right now. I won't name him, but he was wrong. I like Scaldini.
Well, I didn't like the name Banachek whenever Steve Shaw came to me and said, what do you think about changing the name? I said, no, it'll never work. What do I know?
Did it work for him?
Banachek who?
Yeah. Yeah, Scaldini who? So it kept me out of the big time.
Yeah.
So it sort of suits my act, you know, and the way I approach things. Kind of half know what I'm doing and half don't know what I'm doing, you know. So.
Yeah, it was fun. And funny, I think the first time I saw you live, I believe you were opening for Amazing Jonathan. Is that right?
Right. Well, yeah, a couple of weeks I did that little.
I was there 1 week, I guess, when you were there.
He was gracious. He helped Billy McComb have some beautiful fun. And, you know, Rich Block did it, and I did it, and a bunch of people. And
who was that guy, that bald guy that had the, it was funny, had a hair, a rabbit?
Oh, yeah, and they had yogurt in a little thing. It looked like he was talking.
Yeah.
Oh, Block, isn't it? Another Block?
Yeah, his name is Block.
Yeah, that was a great gag. Jonathan was the greatest, funniest guy. That guy, it was a treat to hang and work that show with him. And He gave me some money. And when I went down to the crap table one night, I won $3,400. I cashed the check. I go over to the crap table. I spend 9 hours there. And I walked away with $3,400. Gazzo was there. Joel, who was the Australian guy that helped. I called him up on the phone. They were going to L.A. I said, I just went, you know, at 5 in the morning or something. I said, I just won $3,400. I remember my last roll. I'm in there, and these old guys are scowling, and they hate you to win, of course. They don't want you to win.
Yeah.
So I think, all right, one more. So I laid a big bet down, like, you know, $500. I'm up. Let's give it a roll. I roll a 10. That ain't the greatest number to try to come back on.
Yeah.
And so bingo. Bingo, bango. Bingo, bango, bungo. And the guy's looking, and he's looking at me. He's waiting for a 7 to come up and run me off.
Yeah.
Boom, I hit a 10, and that guy went, ah! He growled at me, and I grabbed my chips and went to bed.
That's a great story, great story. Tim, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
We could spend a lot more time. Thanks very much for sharing the stories you did. And so we are in the dealer's room, but it's actually not open yet, which is why it's kind of quiet. We thought we would step in here for just a few moments. And it's been a great convention, and this is the last day of it. I can't believe it. Just seems like it's been jam-packed with things every day and a lot of fun. It was good having lunch with you yesterday and hanging out. And just the weather's been good up until yesterday, and looks like it might blow off today. So we can get out then later. We got some other outdoor activities, I think, later today. And this morning it was an interesting chat we had from Franz Ferrari, telling just kind of a Q&A thing about his life and traveling overseas, and then what's been happening, how he kind of got things stuck in China during COVID, the beginning of this. And then also we had the three guys from the 1977 contest, in which we had with Lance Burton had won with Jeff Hobson second and Matt King third, and they were all here. Were you there, by the way, at that 77? Do you remember the contest?
Oh, yeah.
You probably come to many of these, and so
I remember the Crandall Award and how we had to hide it from Mac, and yes, I remember them guys.
Yep. So, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Tim Wright, Scaldini. This is Scotty. So we've just finished with a couple of interesting conversations with Lance Burton, actually, focused in two of them. One of them was the afternoon session with the 1977 contest, in which, well, we've already talked about this a little bit in the last part, and then we had Lance Burton and friends, and that was kind of a neat Q&A thing. Well, now I'm going to have a little Q&A with my friends. I started to say friend, but both Fred and Bobby Becker, who are cruise ship people, and how are you guys doing today?
We're doing good. Really well.
You're having a lot of fun?
And so happy to be here. It's so great that this is happening, and we weren't exactly sure if it would all come together, and it really has in a spectacular way.
How about you, Bobby?
Yeah.
You having fun? I mean, how's it going? How are you?
Ditto. I was going to say exactly what he said. It's nice to be back. I think it's been 3 years since we were able to come ourselves, and then, of course, the pandemic.
Right.
A long time. We didn't get to go last year. Nobody did. So it's great to be back.
Because I was going to ask you then, Fred, because you had actually grown up with this convention, right? Tell us a little bit about that and about your first Abbott's.
Right. I can't place a year exactly, but yes, Abbott's and all of this was my gateway to magic, you know, to the career ahead of me. Probably wouldn't have happened if this place hadn't been here. And a lot of that was amplified today when you heard about the contestants, that what you were just talking of, that Mac King and Jeff Hobson, Lance came all in 1 year. You had Kevin James who had competed here. I remember Greg Fruin competing here.
Franz Ferrari,
Jason Byrne. Just a whole list of people that went on to do really great things in magic. And you wonder if it would have happened if it wasn't for the get-together.
Right. And you live how far away from here?
I grew up in Pennsylvania. Central Pennsylvania is about an 8-hour drive. Okay. But I have family here in Michigan. So we were always here in the summer.
And you went to Chavez School here.
Right.
So you actually lived
I moved here.
From Neil Foster?
Yeah.
I did, from Neil Foster, yeah.
That must have been an experience. What was that like? Did he have, like, in his basement or something? Or where was
that? Yeah, he created a studio in the basement of his house. And basically, he only took 4 students at a time. So it was very intense, very personal.
Weeks or months?
It was, I think it was 20 weeks for the course. And so I moved up here, left family and friends and moved up here kind of on my own and developed a whole new set of friends. And I spent a lot of extra time with Neil. Neil didn't drive, so he relied on his students to do things, just even to go grocery shopping.
Really?
Yep. And we did a lot of things together outside of class, and I got to hear about a bunch of the history of magic, his history, the Chavez class, everything about it. He would pass on in stories over dinner and sometimes just at home. He had a great magic video collection that he would share, and it was a great time.
And did you spend much time, though, at Abbott's?
I did, yeah. I never got a job as a demonstrator, which I kind of regret, but I lived right across the street, basically.
No kidding.
Yeah, so I was over all the time, and the Bordners were very good to me. I had worked at that time for money, had worked at that time in the grocery store that burned to the ground. And Neil said to me, "You were fired, literally." So I had no income. And Debbie, Greg's wife, would always recommend me when people would call the shop saying, "Hey, do you have a magician that could come entertain?" She would send me out. So
Now, where was there to go? I mean, aside from a few birthday parties back then, and how far? I mean, did you go all the way to Sturgis and Coldwater? I mean,
yeah. Which is funny because I always like going to Coldwater, but at the time it was in a different area code, which made any call there long distance, right? Yeah, and being on a budget when I'd have to call back a potential job, and it was on that side of the line, it would cost extra money.
Wow. Now, did you know some of the people also who worked there? I was just talking with Tim Wright earlier, and he was talking about working with Tom Mullica and some of the other guys, you know, who were in the workshop and everything. So did you know some of them?
I did. Back then it was mostly Hank Morehouse and Gordon Miller, or Mike Miller, which is his proper name. But we'd spend a lot of time together. And Hank helped me a lot as well. He was a bit of a mentor. Mm-hmm. When I'd go into the shop, and I'm a bit of a reader, I would always buy books, and he'd help direct ones that would help.
Yeah.
Well,
so you don't know what number this would be as far as your Abbott's convention attendance goes?
I really don't.
Into the teens somewhere?
Yeah, I imagine you're right. I attended a whole lot, and then when I started cruising, work took me away from being available to be here. And then in the past couple of years, Bobby and I have been able to be on the shows and entertain people. So,
well, we're going to sit down when I get back up to Dallas sometime with a proper chat with you guys for about an hour. We'll talk about cruising in a lot more detail and everything. But, Bobby, looking forward to getting back on the ships?
Yes and no. We got a little used to being home and in our routine, but you do miss sort of the excitement of where you're going to go, what city you're going to see next, you know, the friendships and all of the things, the social aspect of what we do when we're on the ship, not just the show part of it, but all of that, you know, you miss. I mean, I think everybody missed a little bit of the social aspect of life for the last 16 months. So we're really looking forward to getting back out there and making new friends, meeting new people. You know, I could probably not take the stage again, and I'd be okay. But I know Fred wants to be on the stage. So, but I like all the exotic places that we go and all the people that we meet. That's my favorite part of the job. I just get on stage because...
Yeah, but you were a great singer. You have a great voice, though.
I do. Well, it's how I travel with my husband. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, she'd be happy to sing around the house.
I'm fine. Yeah,
I think it's a crime for her not to share that with the world, but there you go.
You could record a CD or whatever they do nowadays.
I know. Tam Sterlini says, "I know a guy. You got to come and record up here with me and all of
she's
that."
She's got a nice voice, too.
Yeah. And they got a great little show over at the Sterlini Magic Theater.
Well, speaking of which, a lot of things have changed downtown now with Dwayne Laughlin's theater and everything, particularly since you lived here, obviously.
Yes, yeah. There was nothing down. Well, I mean, there was a hardware store, and I think local newspaper was printed there. It came out once a week, that sort of thing. And all that's changed now. And we have magic theaters, magic shops. You trip and you're in a magic shop.
Well, and John Sterlini, I mean, what John and Tam have done to that place is, I haven't seen the others. I don't know everybody else as well, but what John and Tam have done in there is amazing.
Well, it really has made it the magic capital of the world.
Yeah.
And if you'd told me that was possible, that this tiny town could sustain all that, I would never have believed you. So yeah. It is magic.
One flashing stoplight and four magic shops.
Right? Yeah. More magic shops than eateries, I think.
Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah.
Real brick and mortar magic shops as well, which, you know, there's less and less of, but here they're springing up.
I'm hoping that this isn't something that's going to be dissolving into history as far as this get-together in the future.
Thanks for saying that, Scott. I was impressed mostly this year. That was my overall feeling, was of what a legacy this place has created. And all those great names and magic that came through here, came out of this area or because of this event. It really is something to be treasured and nurtured and try to preserve it, you know, make sure that there is future access, not just for the history of it, but how it unlocks magic for the next generation coming along.
I think there will be. You know, I was looking around, actually, funny enough, I had this thought last night sitting in the theater, just kind of looking around and I was thinking about the concession stand. My mind was just roaming before the show, and I was thinking about how hard everybody has to work while we're living our lives. You know, how hard, you know, Greg and Debbie have to work to put this together, and all of the other people, Mike Miller booking the acts, the stage crew, everybody that comes in to create what ends up happening here at a high school gymnasium, down to the concession stand, you know, to keep us fed because we're running from thing to thing. It's a lot of people behind the scenes that make it all come together. And you've got people like BJ, you know, Malin, who have been involved for several years. So there's this new generation of people that are fostering it and nurturing it and keeping it going. And it comes from this tiny little town, but the people that love it and want to keep that going. I think it will continue to go. But it was occurring to me last night, how many people behind the scenes really make this happen while we just show up, you know?
Well, there are other people behind the scenes who just have their little tents and pop-up things or selling magic out of the trunk of their car or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, it supports the city as far as people having their garage sales and everything there, too, you know?
So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot to do. And even for the local town people, you know, that just pop out of their houses and walk down the street to, you know, for all the things they want to see and do. I know our host family, you know, she was saying they had family come in specifically during this time for Magic Week so that they could go to all the festivities and such. So I know the town looks forward to it as well.
It is remarkable how the entire town just becomes part of the event. It's not like attending a magic convention anywhere else where everything's sort of confined to that one hotel. This is acres and acres of magic and friendship everywhere you look.
Been compared to Brigadoon in so many ways, in which they're just kind of, you know, it's here and it's gone.
There was a lady last night, we went to the American Legion, right, for drinks after the shows, and there was a lady in the kitchen, and she looks at me, and she gives me a really big smile.
She was smiling at us, you know?
And I thought, well, she's very friendly. And she came over and she said, I was on stage with you doing the straitjacket a previous year.
Yeah, she said, you guys are such a lovely couple, and I thought, how does she know that? And then she said,
right?
Yeah.
So the townspeople not only keep it up, but they support the shows and become involved. And it was such a fun moment. It was unexpected.
A lot of good memories. That's fun. Well, listen, thank you very much. Appreciate, you know, getting a little bit of perspective also from people who have been coming for a number of years, someone who had resided here. Not many residents, actually, you then, too.
Right.
Are you going to be buried here?
I think, yes. That's my next thing.
Okay. Have you got a plot yet?
We haven't. And shame on me, because it's been on my list. I was going to get it done before I got here.
Started to fill up.
Yeah.
I was talking to Don Weiberg. He just bought one. He came over and said, hey, neighbor. And I said, what do you mean, neighbor? You moving? He said, I just bought a plot near yours.
Oh, my. So,
okay.
Kibbe just bought one.
I'll have to do it next week from over the phone.
Yeah, there you go.
But, yeah. I did make that determination earlier last month. I said, you know what? It's right.
Yep.
That's where I should be.
And you should. So for the Magic Word Podcast, the living legends, right there,
for the time being.
That's right. Bobby and Fred Becker. Thanks again, buddies. I appreciate it a lot. This is Scotty. And so now here we are on, again, the final day on Saturday afternoon in Jerry Costello's home and lovely hospitality. And he's hosting his soiree here on Saturday afternoon by Lake Palmer. And there are probably about 100 of us enjoying meatballs and spaghetti and some beverages of assorted types. And right now we have a lot of magicians of assorted types. And I've got one from New York that I haven't talked to, whom I haven't talked to for a while. Richard Cohen, how are you doing, Richard?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to see you here, Scott.
Good having you here as well. When's the last time you came to Abbott's?
Actually, this is my first time coming.
And what's your experience like?
I'm having a great time. It's what I expected. Since it was my first time coming out here, and it's a bit of a trip from Brooklyn, New York, I came out a few days early, so spent some time over at the American Museum of Magic in nearby Marshall, Michigan. I've also sampled all kinds of meatballs in this part of the country, where they've got a whole bunch of different varieties here at Jerry's house.
It's being fun. The historian that you are, of course, being the Coney Island historian of everything that's going on, when it becomes a Coney Island, you're the guy I would go to about anything having to do with that. You either know it or know somebody who can put me in the right
direction. Hot dogs are the big thing there, not meatballs. Okay. We've got a lot of good meatballs here.
Okay. Yeah. But I would imagine that the American Museum held a lot of interest for you.
Oh, it was fascinating for me. I actually spent 2 days there at the museum and the archive. I met Bob Lund once many years ago at a Magic Collectors Association event out in Chicago. I always admired and respected what he had done. So the museum is a great thing to visit. There's so many fascinating props. I mean, for me, it maybe resonates more than it might for other folks because some of the people I knew or they lived in my neighborhood or because I have an interest in history, I almost feel a connection to some of these people like Houdini's brother Hardeen and Theo Bamberg, known as Akito. I mean, everybody talks about Houdini, who was in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, but Bob Lund collected a lot of stuff about other magicians.
Also, I thought it was interesting, Richard, he would collect things about relatively unknown magicians. There are people whose names you never heard of. He's got these huge posters, but they have beautiful artwork, and he's just trying to celebrate the lives of magicians in general, not just those we know.
Yes. A lot of folks refer to them as tall grass showmen, people that were not on TV or weren't celebrated in the metropolitan press. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the other hand, a lot of these guys who are forgotten now, it's because they were advertising and promoting their shows in an age before the internet, in an age before movies, in an age before TV, in an age before radio. So circus posters and magic posters were the big advertising for a lot of theatrical things.
That's exactly it. I was just right. I was just talking with someone earlier who was saying he is doing a tour, is a touring magician, but he does everything all himself. And he said, of course, advertising today and trying to promote his own shows is more difficult. And I started telling him about circuses, and you can verify this if I'm telling a little bit of a tall tale, but as I recall, there were people who were advance men for circuses who would go like 6 months to a year out in advance, and they would work with the, let's say, the hardware company and the refrigerator salesman and furniture and whatnot. Yep. So this way, they would say, have a circus of savings or whatever. So they would plant subliminal messages so people were thinking about the circus. So when it came time to see the circus posters, they say, oh, you know, I've been wanting to go to a circus. So,
yes, that's true. Okay. Well, also, there's different ages of circus promotion or magic show promotion, because going way back, full evening magic shows and circuses were the two number one box office things in the United States. Mm-hmm. But
who were some of the magicians who had worked in Coney Island, by the way?
Well, now we're changing the topic.
I know we are. I'm really sorry. I can go deep in the weeds speaking of tall grass here, but
But that's one of the fascinating things about the American Museum of Magic in Marshall, Michigan. Before we jump from Marshall to Coney Island, and Bob Lund had a lot of really cool New York stuff, too. One of the last things that I saw while I was there was a picture of my mentor, Arnold Belay, taken by Irving Desfour in 1947. Mm-hmm. And Arnold had this huge promotional pack of Lucky Strike cigarettes. And there was a certain period of time where these commercial tie-ins were really important to promoting your show and kind of localizing the thing, whether you were a tall grass showman doing a storefront show or even if you were in a theater. I mean, when Houdini would do the challenge escapes, the promotion part of it was very important.
Very important.
Very important. Now,
because they didn't have radio and television, like you said, so they couldn't promote yourself.
So it was these posters and stuff. But the advance man thing you're mentioning is also fascinating, too. I was just explaining to a young magician here about what that job was, because I had mentioned that somebody, they were an advance man. It was like, what's an advance man?
Yeah.
it's an old concept. Mm-hmm. But that person I was talking about was Amadeo, who had been an advanced man for Houdini. He worked occasionally at Coney Island. He was in Ripley's. But some of the other Coney Island people, of course, everybody thinks of Al Flosso.
Of course.
He married, his wife Lillian was a member of another well-known magic family that also worked Coney Island, the Kriegers. Her dad was Willie Pop Krieger, and her brother Louis worked at Coney Island. Francis Carlyle worked at Coney Island. Mm-hmm. Joe Dunninger worked at Coney Island. And some of the big attractions were also designed by famous magicians and involved.
Now, were they working in tents, or did they have an actual venue, like a building?
It depends on which guy you're talking about.
Okay, so say Animan.
So, which one?
You said Dunninger or Animan? Which one?
I said Dunninger.
Dunninger, pardon me. Oh, I was going to get those confused.
Dunninger was working at the ranch of the Eden Musée, so that was kind of a big show. That was like a museum.
Okay.
Flosso generally worked a sideshow type thing, Wagner's or the, I forget what they called it. There were different names. I don't think it was necessarily the Dreamland Circus sideshow, mm-hmm. but other magicians worked there. Zeno, Midget Kellar, he worked there.
Okay.
other magicians, Coney Island.
Did Hardeen work there?
Well, actually, Houdini and Hardeen both worked there. Absolutely. They worked at famous music hall that had been the world of wax for many years. Houdini met Bess at Coney Island.
So Hardeen and Houdini worked together, brothers,
initially,
before they
Houdini
met.
Houdini brothers, and then Hardeen, the way I heard it, he was the he was dating Bess first. He introduced Houdini to Bess.
I heard that story, yeah.
And she was from Brooklyn. She was in show business. Oh, boy. It's funny how people used to advertise. I think they had some advertisement that America's leading comedy soubrette. I mean, they just make this stuff up, but they met at Coney Island, they honeymooned at Coney Island, and they'd always go for like anniversaries and hang out there because Houdini loved the whole razzmatazz of Coney Island. Al Baker had a photo booth just next to Luna Park in the summertime because he had done Chautauqua, but theaters all kind of closed down and he didn't have air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Norworth used to have a little diorama on the boardwalk because all the vaudeville theaters would close down. And, of course, he wrote some wonderful songs, quite the magic note. Jackie Flosso, Al Flosso's son, used to tell me that when he was a little boy, he would go and have a shore dinner with his father and Jack Norworth. Jack Norworth wrote Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Oh.
Never had been to a ball game.
He never got taken out to the ball game. He wrote the song.
He wrote the song. He wrote with Nora Bays, Shine on Harvest Moon.
Okay.
You don't want me to do a rendering of that here, because that's what it would be, is a rendering.
So what I was going to suggest is there are so many different avenues we can go down this. I want to really spend some time with you. And
it's a pleasure to talk with you.
No, and actually do a proper episode, because I can see that this is everything you've said. I've had at least two different questions, more as follow-ups. So I know we need to actually sit down with
it's
that.
It's got to be my pleasure. We're on location on a remote here at Abbott's Get-Together. It's a beautiful site. You should probably get some other coverage because you're not going to see a group of magicians like this.
That's what I was about to say. This is going to be, when you said this is your first, you're coming to a great one. First of all, the feel of the family and the Camp Colon type of a thing is always the same. But the people who are here, it really doesn't matter whether it is Lance Burden or whether it's Scott Wells. I mean, it could be high or low. I mean, somebody that's well known or a no name, you're rubbing shoulders and everybody's kind of feeling as if it's your brothers and sisters. And so it just so happens this year we just have an outstanding lineup of celebrity magicians, if you will, which is unlike previous years or any previous convention. But the same feel that you are receiving now, you will get next year or future years, even though you won't be having Lance come back next year, you know.
This is Colon. Yeah. It's different than Las Vegas. It's different than Los Angeles. It's different than New York. There's a lot of local color, and the people are very nice here.
Yeah, yeah. They are extremely nice. All right, well, listen, we're going to jet on over here. I know they're getting ready to actually clean up the kitchen. And so while we're chatting here in the kitchen, they're going to start making some noise in a moment, and we're not going to be able to hear us. So I am going to sign off for here just a minute. Richard Cohen, thanks very much for joining me, my friend.
Thank you so much, Scott.
So the Magic Word Podcast. That was Richard Cohen. Scotty out. So here we are on, again, the last day, and we're over in Jerry Costello's lovely mansion by the lake, Lake Palmer. Here we are. And we're having just a little soiree with just a couple hundred of his closest friends and some of mine, which includes Derek Kennedy, who is from all the way from Fort Worth. So, man, we came all the way up here to enjoy this. How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing great, Scott. Good to see you here. I have to come all this way to see you.
That's right. I mean, we're in Texas, but yes. I don't get to see you very much all the time.
Because you're busy, I guess, all the time.
Yes. Now, you're still Magic Etc.
Still Magic Etc. 36 years of business coming up. Wow.
Now, you do online business as well, don't you?
We do. Real easy. Plug magic-etc.com.
Dash ETC.com. Now, you're still doing Halloween spook houses.
We're not doing the haunted house anymore. That company, they moved out in 2013. She sold the business and moved away. But we still sell and rent Halloween costumes and props and makeup and wigs and things like that.
But you don't do the thing in the back like you used
anymore.
To.
Nope, that's all full of my junk now.
No, I didn't know that was actually operated by somebody else.
It was a different company. Deanne Dagan had a company called Lottie Dot Productions.
Oh, and yeah,
it was and it was a charity, so they got the space for free for all those years. After 25 years, she retired.
Was that about the time when we did the Houdini seance in Fort Worth?
Yes, about almost the same year, I believe it was.
I was thinking it was, because I remember talking about la-di-da.
Yes, I think it was the same year.
Did she close her business, or what's she doing?
Yeah, because she still does corporate events, special events when she wants to.
Okay.
But not out of the haunt business, totally out of the haunt business, though.
Yeah, because I think she'd book me when I used to live up there. Because she booked magicians also for
yes,
shows.
She did. Yeah, she did, absolutely.
Anyhow, aside from that, I know we're here, and you've been coming to Abbott's for a long time, and now you've been talking about buying some property here. Are you still thinking about doing that?
There are days.
Yeah.
I do look still. There's not as much property available as there was, say, just 3 years ago.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know if it's... If COVID slowed it down, or just more people have discovered the fact how cool it is to be up here. Yeah. You know, people from Detroit, Chicago, close by, Indiana, close by. So, but the spaces are getting limited and limited. It's funny, I almost bought the property next door to Jerry's about 2 years ago. I looked at it. So.
Yeah. But, well, you probably should have, because I was just talking with his wife about that, and that place apparently is about to, there's a family, I guess it's going to be, long story, but they're going to be tearing it down and building a larger house there. So it's going to be off the market shortly.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
No, it's a great community to be in. You come every year, too, you know what I'm saying. You get up here, it's relaxing.
It really is. Now, that's... one of the things, too, I was thinking how that people have, during COVID, have been realizing that they can actually work from home, and so you don't need to travel and back and forth, and so why live in the middle of the city when you can live really, literally anywhere you want and then commute from your computer, basically.
Yes.
And so as they realize that, well, hey, that's not a bad gig. And also, I think over time, people realize that they have the they may not be making as much money, but their quality of life is much better and slowed down. So they decide, I think I'll just move to a little smaller town where it's a slower lifestyle.
I agree with you 100%. I had good friends who lived in Arlington, Texas for 35 years. They were from Battle Creek. They came to the get-together 2 years ago, stayed with me at Miller's Landing, fell in love so much, they both moved back up here again. They moved permanently back. They got a house over on Maple, and that's Kurt Ritchie and Carol Ritchie. Kurt works for Sterlini, works for Fisher, works for Fab, works for
all the magic shops.
All the magic Abbott's. He does them all. He's all over town.
You say he works for them. What does he do for them?
Everything from a lot of the videography and photography.
Oh, okay.
And Carol's she's the greeter at all the shows. She's now on the Chamber of Commerce Board. She's on the DDA already.
Wow.
They're just great people.
Yeah.
So they loved it enough to move back up.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I think another thing you told me before, you are the only person I know who travels by train everywhere you go. You still do that? Do you get here by train?
Oh, absolutely. But I'm not the only person. The trains are very full.
I know. The only one I know.
Oh, yes. I get on the train every day, you know, Fort Worth, get to Chicago the next day, get on another train, come to Battle Creek, rent a car, you're here.
And you told me you actually have a credit card, so you get miles on, like I do on the airplane, you do over a train.
I have an Amtrak credit card, so, and I buy product for the stores, so I build up points. The trips are free.
And then you have your own little heater and air conditioner thing you put under the seat in front of you?
No, it's a full room. It's got a double beds, it's got a shower, it's got a toilet, it's got tables, your meals are all included.
Uh-huh.
It's very comfortable, actually, if you don't mind the time, because it does take 20-plus hours, and it's late a lot of the times.
So from Fort Worth to get here, does it come straight to Colon or to...
No, it goes to Chicago. It's about 24 hours to Chicago, and then there's an hour and a half to two-hour layover from Chicago. Another little smaller train, about an hour and a half ride to Chicago to Battle Creek.
And then at Battle Creek, you rent a car?
Rent a car in Battle Creek, and it's 20 minutes down, you know, a short drive.
And you're relaxing.
It is. I don't stress out, because on a train, they're always running late, so you never have to worry about that. And it's just to me, it's more relaxed. It's part of the trip. Even though it takes longer, it's all part of the deal.
And they got Wi-Fi on board, too?
On some of the trains, they do. It's the one going from Battle Creek to Chicago, definitely, because it's more of a commuter. Mm-hmm. And the one coming up in and out of service, so you got to be careful.
You consider that like as part of a vacation? In other words, you're kind of relaxing while you're on the train so you could read and whatever?
I do bookwork, paperwork, watch movies, sleep, eat. There's always food available. So it's part of the adventure. Just, you know, flying is not.
Yeah.
But a train is part of the adventure.
Because you really get to talk with the other passengers and meet some people, make new friends.
I've done that. Dinner is usually community seating, so you meet people from all over, and you always meet them.
How are you, sir?
Doing good.
Good to see you.
Me too. And I've met a lot of good people on the train. It's fun.
Uh-huh. Wow.
But I always recommend, if you want to do it, overnight, get the big sleeper car and don't be in a hurry.
Now, you've been to a lot of Abbott's get-togethers, and how would you compare this with others?
This one's fun. I think because everybody missed a year, everybody's very excited to see each other again. And there's a lot of faces I haven't seen in years. And like you pointed out, I come up here and I run into people from Houston area or Austin area, and I talk to them, I have to come all the way up to do it. It's good. And this year I've done a lot of different things. I've seen the local shows as opposed to always the high school shows. So I've kind of been more supporting the local guys. And it's been real good. I've watched the buskers and stuff like that.
That's right. Yeah, well, they always have the buskers out there. But then this year they have added that. I mean, Dwayne Laughlin has his shows. And mm-hmm. I think then Rick Fisher has some things going on.
He's got a lot of product for sale. And the Sterlinis have shows in their theater. And Shango does a show in their theater also. And they're all good shows. And I saw the Magic City Players presented an Elvis tribute today, and I went and watched it.
Yeah.
So there's something going on all the time.
Yeah, you got lots of activities. Even though today, or I should say at this convention, they didn't have daily tickets. You had to buy like a whole registration because of COVID rules,
I guess. And that was part of, unfortunately that happened. And that's what happened. You know, they didn't know any better when they started. That's all they could do.
Yep.
So they had to do it.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens next year if they go back to the old format or not. I don't know. I just know the dates have been announced.
What are the dates?
I think it's the 4th, 5, 6, 7, I believe is what it is.
That was this year.
I think it's 3. Then it's 3, 4, 5, 6. It's 1 year, day earlier.
Okay, it's 3, 4, 5, 6. When is Magic Live next year? Do you remember?
That I don't know yet.
I think they have announced that. I know they have because I've already registered. I'm hoping it's going to be the week after.
I think it's later in August. I know they don't butt up to each other like they have in the past.
Yeah.
So
or overlap.
Or overlap even, yes. So it looks like Abbott's will be here next year. And it'll be curious if they go back to the smaller registration or the open night seating. You know, we'll just see where COVID has everybody also.
Well, that's true, too. With nearly 600 registrants, I think so many people just ready to get back. And this is the first live convention. And it is a fun convention. I mean, all conventions are fun, but as people have been listening to these episodes over the last, few days that we've been doing the daily reports, you can tell how everyone really is talking about this being more of a family kind of a thing. Wait, the TAOM is or used to be with a picnic kind of a thing. You see the same people who only attend that. There are some people here I see only here that don't go to the IBM SAM or any of the other conventions.
No, definitely friends and family here. And the performers this year have been great because they've all been hungry to perform somewhere.
Right.
And so that's why they've been able to get such great shows every night.
I think that's true. When Lance Burton said he was going to be coming, then Matt King said, well, I think I'll come. And they said, well, Mac's coming. You know, then Dave Williams said, I'm going to be coming, you know.
And then Jeff Hobson comes in.
Yes, I'm coming,
yeah. He's got to get the ball rolling. You've got everybody. So everybody you've always wanted to see is here this year.
Yeah. I know Stan Allen wanted to come, but because of COVID, I think at the last minute he pulled the plug on that one.
Was? Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, he would have been here as well.
And, you know, you look around. Every once in a while, you'll see someone with a mask. You won't see someone with a mask. It's all, because a lot of it's outdoors. Like, we're outdoors right now, so you don't see anything. Indoors, at the Legion, I've seen mask and no mask.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point. Yeah, because the Legion, it is kind of compact, and there's not a lot of fresh air coming in and out.
No, not at all.
I can smell some of the people have been here a few days with the same clothes.
The ones that are camping out in their trailers.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Which is another thing. A lot of people are camping. That's true.
Oh, they do. There's like teepees set up over there on Dallas Street by the high school.
I was just talking to Louis Fox earlier, and he was telling me that this is his first one, and he was camping, and he showed me a picture, apparently because the rainstorm we had last evening had knocked down a lot of limbs and high winds, as well as the rain, that one of the limbs had blown over a trash can lid into his thing and crushed his tent.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And what I did, some of the guys on Dallas Street, I drove by and their displays were knocked down or they're drying out their product. So
oh,
it really got wet.
That's too bad.
But that's the only bad thing about this one. But if you come to an Abbott's, somebody's the first year, they always come back the next year. Yeah. I've seen that happen. I always say, is your first year? Yes. What do you think? I'm coming back.
Yeah.
I'm coming. I never hear anybody say, this is horrible, I'm not coming back. I've never heard that.
Yeah. Good point. That's a good point. Well, Derek, thanks for again. It's always good to have your input over here. Jerry, hey, here's a guy who actually is hosting things, and he's busy. I just want a minute to say hello to Jerry Costello.
Hi.
Say thank
How is
you.
Everybody? Thank you. Thank you for being here, and thank you for everybody else for being here.
Yes, so this is something we all look forward to every year, and the weather was great yesterday. We had the rain, so it let up today, so fortunately it was nice.
I don't know if Paul Emick sent us an omen and told us not to do it yesterday or what, but we're happy to do it today, and it's great weather. It's a little humid, but
it was great. A lot of people brought some food, but you also, what do we have, like spaghetti and meatballs? You also got some teriyaki balls?
Ribs, pulled pork, shredded beef, two kinds of meatballs.
All kinds of
Cuban
fruit.
Sandwich.
Oh, Cuban sandwich too.
Okay. Pizza sandwich,
and then all kinds of cheese boards and fruit platters.
Yeah, Trixie brought that charcuterie board. Is awesome.
Yeah. Well, she was preparing that. I was saying, I don't know if everybody's going to be eating that because there's so much food, and some of the people already come and gone. Because this is the kind of thing people do come and go to all evening.
Yeah, 2:30 to 6:00, so we'll have a big crowd. Julie.
And this is
Jerry's
wife.
This is my wife, Julie.
Here's Julie.
Say hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
You're on the magic word.
We are the gathering place for Abbott's Magic Week. Yep.
And you've been coming here for how many years?
We have owned this house almost 28 years.
Yeah. But you actually reside in Florida, but you're retired now, and you're going to be up here more often.
We're trying to figure that out.
Okay. You hope
it's
to be here more.
It's a big Tetris puzzle.
Okay.
Moving all the blocks.
Is it a little bit of time? Well, you got plenty of time for that. Yeah. Well, you guys have done a great job, and I don't want to stop because you're running between things over here.
But as you can see, the view here is awesome.
Yes, it's to die for. This is great. Yeah, it's beautiful right now. A lot of people on the lake. I see two pontoon boats or a couple of jet skis out there, and everyone having families having a wonderful time. Beautiful weekend here on Saturday.
And we have great neighbors. So you can't see the other end, but there's probably 100 cars out there in different places in the neighbor's yards
and
stuff
mind.
Like that. No.
That's just great.
So we have to thank them very much.
Yes, exactly. Julie and Jerry, thank you guys very much. So the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out. So we've just seen the evening show, the final evening show, and that was Lance Burton and Friends, and that included Michael Godot and Keith West and Fielding West, and it was... a very funny and fine show, and well received. Full house tonight. Good weather outside, and now they're going to be having just a little meet and greet, and then also having the auction of the items that John Jansky had painted. But in the meantime, I'm here with one of the people who is also part of the talent lineup this week at Abbott's. So please welcome my friend Kevin James. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Scott.
So glad that you're here because this is kind of home week for you, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I grew up on these Abbott's conventions as a teenager, and I have a lot of history here, made a lot of lifelong friends here, and I love coming back. I can't get back, as often as I'd like.
Sure.
But the stars aligned, and this was a perfect time.
That's a good point. The stars did align, almost quite literally. It seems like as far as magic celebrity stars, I mean, you and all the rest of the guys, seem like one guy came, and this guy like, yeah, I think I'll come too, and then I'll come. And before long, I mean, it's kind of like, had this been earlier, later or early before COVID, it might not have had that accessibility because you're on the road. You know?
Normally you have
one headliner.
Normally I'm working in the summertime, and for the last 18 months I've had off, and they asked me if I'd do it about a year ago, with the hopes that they would be able to do it, and they were every month they'd see what the Michigan governor was going to say, like how far they could open up, so there was always a roll of the dice whether it was going to happen or not. So I'm glad it did happen.
I'd like for you, if you don't mind, to recount the story you were talking about in your lecture briefly, and that was about how you'd come here, and then you heard about the Long Beach Mystics and moved to California. Kind of that short story there.
Sure, it was
long story. Short story.
It was in 1977. I was a kid seeing Abbott's, I think, for the first time, and I was in the in the audience watching, and one evening's performance was from the Long Beach Mystics, and these were kids that were performing that were four or five years older than me, but they were 10 years ahead of me in what they were doing. So I just I was so impressed with these guys, and I just had to figure out you know, how can I get to California and drink the Kool-Aid that they're drinking and mm-hmm. find out what they're doing. And basically they just had a very supportive group of pros like, you know, Les Arnold and Bill Smith and Mike Caveney and Stan Allen. And we had a little clubhouse. I'm not quite sure how they paid for that clubhouse, but, you know, we used to do little fundraisers to help with that. But
I'm curious about how they welcomed you. In other words, you're a Midwesterner, and then you move out to California, where those guys kind of grew up with each other, where they have their own clique, and here's some guy. It's like, you want to be part of this. So how did that...
You know, they didn't care. They were welcoming to everybody. It didn't matter who you were. If you came and you showed an interest, they would invite you into the group. And
there were people who came and went, I guess, as well. I mean, there weren't all people who came and stayed and went out to notoriety.
Yeah, but, you know, the list of people that have become top professionals in that group is a who's who, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Kalen and Dana Daniels and Stan Allen and Mike Caveney and Bill Smith, Les Arnold. I mean, you know, it's a really long... I know I'm missing a lot.
Yeah,
Michael
David
Weber.
Diebel.
You know, it's some serious performers there.
Yeah. Was Charlie Fry part of that group by chance?
No.
No, okay.
But they just had a way of being, you know. It was a great place to be bad. It had a little library, a little stage, a little camera, a TV monitor, and you do your act every week. And so you could see it, you know. And then everyone would just sit around and come up with ideas for you, you know. We'd tear the acts apart, but in a very loving and constructive way. And these guys were, you know, there was no competition amongst us. You know, we were just all trying to move forward and to all get better together, you know. And it was just a really great place to be bad.
That's one of the interesting things, I think, also, Kevin, is how everyone had their own thing, their own personality, their own tricks. In other words, it wasn't like a Chavez school where they're teaching you cookie-cutter things of all the 100%. Same types. Yeah, it was all you, and they would kind of refine what you brought.
Yep, originality was highly encouraged.
Okay. And if you started copying somebody else's, they'd say, no, that's not the direction.
Yeah, you can't do that, or, you know, why not be different? I mean, just being in L.A. at that time, you saw so many magicians there that the only way to stand out, you know, was to do something that no one else was doing.
That reminds me of what Mac King was talking about today when he had competed and he was doing Terry Seabrook's routine line for line. And apparently Terry was in the show the night before and he had not seen him and he was wondering why he wasn't getting chuckles even. They said...
Yeah, fell flat.
Yeah. But it was an inspiration to him and kind of a taking off point, thinking, I can't do somebody else's stuff. I need to be creative and do my own stuff. And it was really, I think, hopefully inspirational to a lot of young people and adults as well to perhaps think, maybe I should start working on my own stuff.
Yes, 100%. You know, and I almost was trying to be original to a fault. Like, I would try something new every week, and nothing would ever get good enough. So at one point, Stan said to me, I remembered, like it was yesterday, he's like, why don't you just stick with something for a little while, you know, and see if it gets really good, you know? And I'm like, well, you know, I agree with these guys. It's not good. So let's find something that can be good. So
that reminds me to ask, how did you come up with the name of the inventor? I mean, each of the people seems like have a different, within the illusionist, of whether, of whatever names they have. And so, how did that moniker come about?
When we first started, the producer said, so our marketing strategy is to give you all monikers. So just think of, you know, what your magic specialty is. And, you know, imagine if you were a magic superhero, what would your superpower be? And I felt that the inventor would be a big playground to play in. I could pretty much do anything. I wouldn't box myself in too much. And so I chose that. And, you know, so you've got the showman and the escapologist and the, you know, the mentalist. And so I felt the inventor was different and it would and it could be could really say, you know, my specialty is trying to be really different.
So. It always has been, so it seems perfect as far as your title, which you can, you know, work into. It actually, it is you.
you know, basically.
So I'm just trying to tweak that character a little.
As we start to wrap up over here, since this is the 83rd Abbots, and you've been coming since 77, one of the things they were talking about, of course, was 1977, in which Lance Burton was competing and won first place, and Jeff Hobson got second, and Mac got third. Do you remember that competition at all?
Yeah, I was in the audience, and I was brand new. I'm not sure if I missed it, but I don't remember a whole lot about it, to be quite honest.
Okay.
I have a feeling I missed it. And then, but I came back the next year again, and I was in the front row with bells on, and Matt King was in the contest, and, you know, he borrowed, you know, a dollar bill from me, and I got to help him with that Seabrook routine he was working on.
That is funny. And so I would hey, Keith West did a great job. There he's walking by. Good evening show for him. He's off because I got to go do their sign and meet and greet things. Since you've been coming all this time, how would you compare this particular Abbots to others? It's different in some ways, and what would you say?
I think it's a great start back from the pandemic. You know, there's some things that have been pared down because of, you know, restrictions, you know, and the dealer's room is not as big as it as I remember. You know, it used to be at the elementary school, and now it's not. But I think that will come back when everything's wide open and they can, you know. What I really miss is not them not being able to sell a lot of tickets to the general public. Having a bunch of lay people in the audience is really a great thing.
It does add a lot as far as laughter and applause and everything, and you get those people up front or whatever, and here we got a lot of jaded magicians with their arms crossed. Mm-hmm. You know?
Exactly right. It helps with everything.
But it's been a really great convention. It's good seeing you, Kevin. Wish you the best with the Illusionists as you get back on the road again.
Yep, thanks. We'll be in Montreal in December.
And that's going to be running for how many, 45 days or something, what did you say?
Oh, I don't know. Three weeks, I think.
Three weeks. Okay, very good. So thanks again for your time. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Kevin James. This is Scotty out. All right. One of the things, by the way, I want to thank before we wrap up this year's Abbots Get Together, we've got a lot of people who have been saying they've been enjoying the Magic Word, and particularly the daily updates that I've been doing. And I want to thank some people who have contributed also and joined the Friends of the Magic Word. Thanks, Chuck Arkin, for your continuing support and your donations while you were here, as well as Jerry Costello. And also, I want to thank Gene Protus, who had sent something in by PayPal, which you can do. You can join the Friends of the Magic Word that way and help support us. And also a new member, it was James DeMayer, and Jimmy hopes to come next year and perhaps perform. He's out in Vegas and does a great job, and so he has just become a Friend of the Magic Word then as well. Also, I just learned that of the passing of John McClanahan, who is was the owner of the magic shop he bought from Denny and Lee out in Vegas, and he, I believe, had a heart attack just a few days ago. I just got a phone call from Chris Randall, who had passed that information on to me, so that's relatively new information to me. Now, as we start to close, I wanted to tell you what's going to be happening then next year. So, you know, we started this whole podcast reviews earlier this week with Greg Bortner, and so I thought it'd be a good idea if we talk with the other half, the better half, on the back end of this. I've got Debbie Bortner with me right now. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Scott. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here then as well. Really glad to be here. And so this has really been, I don't know what to say, an undertaking. And it's been, are we, aren't we? And kind of on and off and not sure. And we're going to have a large group, small group, start out 300. And so how many registrants do we end up with?
We kept it at 600.
Yep. And you had to be registered. You couldn't buy a single evening ticket, right?
Yes. When we talked with the health department and the school, they decided that we needed to keep the group the same as much as we could every night. And so to do full registrations and be able to monitor the numbers that we had and the people that were here, that was the easiest way to do it and the most effective and safest.
Right. And everyone, I'm sure, has been coming to you and thanking you, as I have, you know, for putting this on. And I started to ask what challenges have you had, but you can imagine everything has been challenging.
Yes. Like you say, we started planning in February. We wanted to move forward, and we were hoping to have 500. We felt we were optimistic with that. And then when we got into the middle of June, we were still at 350. Mm-hmm. We could have half not even a third capacity. So then I started to get a little nervous.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, how do you look at the budget and say how many people can we have booked, and then if we have to, refund? And so those are the kinds of things that we dealt with. Mm-hmm. It was also how do we keep people safe? That was probably first and foremost.
Of course.
So as you saw, we spaced chairs out quite a bit. We didn't have as many people in the
bleachers.
Yes, in the bleachers, so people could spread out a little bit and feel safer. We recommended that people wear masks. Of course, we did not mandate it, and that was another piece that we hoped would make people feel safe.
And whenever you, Mike Miller started booking some of these acts, it seems like the floodgates just opened, and they said, well, if you're coming, I'm coming. So was that kind of exciting for you, too, as far as getting all this great talent?
Actually, back last year, Mark Holstein set up a Zoom, and he invited lots of people. We didn't know at the time who had been invited. They just said, click on it this time. And so when we got on that Zoom session, we saw who was there. It was absolutely heartwarming to see everybody, but it was extremely emotional as well. And at that time, everybody said, we want to come back to Colon. We want to be a part of Colon again. And I, after we finished, and I kind of jokingly said, well, this is a Friday night show we can't afford with all the talent that was there. And I thought, too, the second thing was, wouldn't it be just amazing to have all these people here at one time? But life sometimes gets in the way, mm-hmm. and I figured as things happen that that there might be better opportunities, let's put it that way, for people. But, boy, they were true to their word, and they showed up, and it's just been amazing. And it's really been historic, some of the things that have happened this week. When we use the word epic, it truly is epic, because I don't imagine that we can ever get this group of people together that have had the experiences at the get-together as they've had and shared. And I was just overwhelmed on how willing and accepting they were of wanting to do all the things that they did in terms of question and answers and being willing to, whatever we asked, they said, we will do whatever you want. And I could not believe
wow.
how open and receptive they were to help. And so that support for us, our business and our family, has been really humbling.
Like Lance Burton, for an example, where he was doing three different events here today, and there were other people who were used multiple times. It seems like Jeff Hobson was doing everything, and mm-hmm. everybody was just willing to pitch in and help, you know, just because, hey, we're family. You know?
That was much more a part of it. Sometimes you don't even do these things for your family members, so we feel very blessed.
Yeah.
And, you know, we, of course, checked and double-checked to make sure when we were doing the schedule that people were amicable to all these things. And, again, every time we would ask of something, they'd say, whatever we need to do, we're willing to do. And so I really felt that the schedule today was a bit overwhelming, but they were okay to everything. And so it was just amazing.
Well, everything was great, because even though we didn't have the public show that the Lions usually, doesn't the Lions sponsor that show on Saturday
yes.
luncheons kind
yes.
of a thing at
yes.
noon? And then that money goes to them, have a mm-hmm. Charitable thing. And so there were other shows that were not done. It seems like everything was happening downtown. I mean, as you usually have like the few of the tents and everything. Of course, that was subdued, not as many tents up and down mm-hmm. the road as you normally have. Mm-hmm. There's supposed to have been food trucks. I didn't see any food trucks in town. Well, did they come in, or did I miss them, or?
I don't know about that.
Well, we were told there would be, but I have to tell you that I am grateful to our local churches, because when I
oh,
made
yeah.
a phone call
they
and said
forward.
We are going to have a lot of people here for the full week, and yeah. it's been a while since we've had those kinds of numbers, and would you sponsor a dinner? And
yeah.
they all did, and they all did very well, I might say.
Yeah.
Our athletic director, who's been running the concession stand here at the high school, it was the same thing. I asked her in June. I said, I know that we're going to have a lot of people, and we're going to have to keep people at the high school. Would you be willing to run a concession stand? And again, she said, this has just been wonderful. So, you know, it's not just about all the participants in the convention, but it's also about our community and how our community opens up and welcomes people and tries to accommodate as the best that they can. But also, I don't think people realize you know, what our what as a family we do behind the scenes to try and make it a success and a place that people want to come back to.
Well, it certainly is a place that people do come back to and want to come home to. Mm-hmm. And it has such a different feel from other kinds of conventions because it does feel like Camp Colin, where you're kind of coming in and everyone is a camp counselor. And someone had said earlier in the week, there's probably $100,000 worth of talent just in the audience. You know what I mean? That was
yes.
just great and epic is the word that you use, and it certainly was.
Yes.
Hard to repeat in future years. Not just next year, but
oh, yes.
yeah, the fact that everyone's right now just coming out of COVID, it's just before everyone goes back to work. It's kind of like, I got time, I can do this, and mm-hmm. and I want to see my friends again, and this would be a good one to start with. And so just timing was great. This is the first big convention, in-person live convention,
yes.
and so so many people showed up, and it's been so fun. And everybody I have spoken to have just said, this is just over the top, one of the best, you know.
And I think people were ready for it. But again, one of the things I think that's unique about us as a Magic Convention is that it's like a family reunion that you really want to attend.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see
a family you love.
A family that you want
to spend time with.
Exactly. And like I say, so many of the stories about their experiences and what they remember and how they perceive in their youth, we had many people come into the shop and say, I haven't been here for 50 years, and when I walk in, I feel like a kid again. It takes me back in a place that where I was exploring, especially magic and what magic did for them in their lives. So when you touch people in those ways, I think it's very hard for other conventions to have that feel of coming home and renewing an experience that you had in the past and talk about famous people that have walked across that stage. It's just amazing to think when we look back historically at the folks that have been on that stage over time, and it really truly is kind of mind-boggling when you start thinking about it.
There was a lot of respect and homage to the past masters, as well as recognizing young people mm-hmm. as well. But there were some things done with tips of the hat to people who had done this or that over the years mm-hmm. who have passed. And, of course, Al, only taking the graveyard tour and everything that's going on out here. So this does have a great, rich heritage mm-hmm. Of magicians and magic, you know, basically, with a lot of promising youth. I see so many young people who are here. I mean, we talk about conventions like where a lot of them, the average age is dead, you know, they joke.
Yes.
Whereas here, that's not the case. I see a lot of really young people here, you know.
This is the first year where I really see that to be true, mm-hmm. and it's really hopeful.
Yeah.
Because as we lose so many of our dear friends, they're being replaced with new friends, and I think mm-hmm. that's what really will keep things alive and going forward. But I do want to acknowledge the Blackstone family, because truly, if it wasn't for Harry Sr. in 1926 coming to Colin and setting the stage for magic to be here, I don't know that we'd still be here today. And I wonder, as I was writing my little notes, what he would think about this if he could step through that door today.
Oh, that's interesting to imagine, you know, what that would be like.
95 years later, to
yeah.
see what he had started in essence
right.
and the legacy that he has kept in Colin as far as the magic community going.
Well, as we wrap up and talk about going forward, tell me about what's going to be happening next year and about the dates and registration.
Mm-hmm. It's August 3rd through the 6th. We already have many acts already procured. We are going to have a South American night with some of the entertainers we were supposed to have in 2020.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're delayed. We also are going to have a Japanese evening with acts from Japan. And then lots of other surprises. So this is something that's constantly in motion and constantly involves and already planning for the next year before this convention is over. So we'll see how it evolves. But go to www.abbottmagic.com for updates and pricing and see who else we've added to our list of performers.
And the sooner you register, the better price you're going to get.
That's correct. Pre-registration will be $245, and then it usually will go up November 1st from there.
There you go. Debbie, thanks so much for not just the time you've taken here, but also the time of putting this whole thing together. And you can probably, maybe this week, start to relax a little bit, maybe. have a cup of tea.
I think I'll sleep in tomorrow and have two cups of coffee.
There you go. So for the Magic Word Podcast, this has been the 2021 Epic Convention in Colin, Michigan. That was Debbie Bordner. This is Scotty out.